The practice of medicine and the doctors it's comprised of is typically held in high esteem, with much respect and even at some time envy. This is Lisa Berry, but the path to get there may be more difficult than most people realize, and the burnout and depression, and in some cases even the regret of being a physician, has prompted a lot of people to take another look at the process, including right here in Ann Arbor. I'm joined now on 89.1 WEMU by Dr. Marshall Runge, Dean of the University of Michigan Medical School, who recently wrote a piece about how medicine needs a culture change to retain talented physicians. Thanks for your time and input.
Pleased to speak with you, Lisa.
Now, for people who may not be familiar, let's just start at the beginning. How long does it take to become a doctor? First, you go to undergrad school, you get your degree, and then what happens?
So it's 4 years in medical school, and then depending on what field you go into, about the shortest training is 3 years after medical school. Some training programs for highly subspecialized areas can be 8 or 9 or 10 years after medical school.
And that's a pretty grueling process, is it not?
It is. Again, it varies from specialty to specialty, but a period of time during which there's a tremendous amount of learning going on, but also a great deal of responsibility for the care of the patients that a resident is involved with.
So you went through that, and I understand you had a daughter who also is now a pediatrician who went through that process, and she kind of opened your eyes to maybe doctors need more of a work-life balance?
Yes, just to be transparent about it, I'm a prototypical person of my era, and I had heard a lot of people talking about work-life balance, and I thought, well, I know that's important, but we got to get the job done. And my daughter really did open my eyes because, as you said, she's a pediatrician. She decided to be in a university-affiliated practice, and she chose to be in a practice that would allow her to be part-time. She's about 70% time. And interestingly, she's one of four women in that practice, and now they're all 70% time. And she has had opportunities to go to other practices that pay a lot more, but she's just decided that that's not what she wants to do with her life. She and her husband have two children, and they're dedicated to their children, and they want to remain healthy, and they want to be able to get plenty of sleep, and they just don't want to have to push themselves as hard as she might if she were in full-time practice.
So you wrote this piece, I guess it's been almost 6 months now, about that. Do you think that's a change that you're going to be pursuing now at Michigan Medicine?
Yes, I think the hardest part of this, and I reflected on that in the op-ed that I wrote, the hardest part is it's going to take us in organized medicine more flexibility and more innovative thinking in order to capture the interest, the long-term interests of this generation of physicians, because I think one of the things that has been discouraging to physicians is to be in situations where there's such inflexibility that it's really difficult to be able to be the kind of physician they want, but also be able to be the kind of person and parent and partner that they want to be. So, for example, I also mentioned in that article a different situation of a person who had childcare responsibilities and just couldn't make it on time to a procedure area that started pretty early. And it took a mind shift for people to realize that it doesn't hurt anything to start procedures in that case, or start anything a little bit later in the morning that would accommodate someone like the person that I referred to in the article. And I tell you, once I wrote that op-ed, I get calls and emails from people all the time who are here, who are struggling with this. And so I think not just in academic medicine and university hospitals, but also in private practice, that there will be a change. But I think it's only now becoming clear that we have to have that change. We'll lose a generation of people who've gone through all that medical school and training because they'll become discouraged with it.
Do you think that's going to be a tough fight because of the doctors already in place who said, hey, we went through this already, suck it up, and you can go through it too, saying that to newer, younger doctors?
I think that's a real factor. And I think, I hope I wasn't quite like that, but that's a little bit where I was thinking, well, it's hard. You know, you went into medicine, medicine's hard. Now, after reflecting on it, I think that's the wrong answer. The right answer is we need to rethink how we organize the lives of physicians who work here and work in other settings so that they can have a reasonable work-life balance.
A reasonable work-life balance. And since we're being transparent, full disclosure, I have a son who is just wrapping up his first year of residency, not at Michigan Medicine, but it's been tough to see the hours and the toll and the stress. And, you know, in their residents and they're meeting patients and they're still having to take exams. It's a tough process, but it also seems like it's not going to be easy to reverse that.
Well, it's a tough process, and I want to make a couple of comments about that. So a number of years ago, there were studies suggesting that one of the factors that could lead to making a medical error was sleep deprivation. And at that time, all of the organizations that oversaw residency training agreed to limit work hours. Work hours were essentially unlimited before. The expectation could be that you just have to be there in the hospital. So the work hour, the duty hour or work hour restrictions, on the one hand, have been somewhat helpful, but on the other, the issue has been that it just compresses the amount of time that a resident has to complete their work. So when I was a resident, it was not uncommon for me to get 2 or 3 or 4 hours of sleep when I was on call. Today, I think that's unusual. I think residents rarely get any sleep when they're on call. In many different fields. And part of that also is because much of residency is completed taking care of patients in the hospital, and just with the changes in healthcare, the patients in the hospital now have a much higher acuity of disease, so they're sicker. As I mentioned in the op-ed that I wrote, there are other stresses, I think, on residents. I don't know if where your son is training to have an electronic medical record or not, but that's commonly cited as one of the very few technology innovations that costs time rather than saving time. Documenting your interaction with the patient, but doing that in a computer rather than writing handwritten notes. And you can see the attraction of it. You can always read a typed note, and they're very complete. But the downside is the physician, whether it's a resident or a faculty physician, actually has to type in those notes. And so many people complain now that they go see their doctor and in an outpatient setting, and the doctor spends much less time with them than previously because they're rushing to type in everything that you say.
What about doctors already in practice and depression? And are you seeing and experiencing doctors being depressed and possibly even regretting taking up this profession?
Yes, absolutely. It's well known that in the worst case scenario, depression and leading to suicide in physicians is 2 or 3 times higher than in the general population of the same age. And that's a terrible thing. And the rates of depression in physicians have been cited to be anywhere from 20% or higher. And burnout, which I commented on in that op-ed, it's one of the factors that leads to depression, where you just feel so burned out, you can't get any of the joy out of interfacing with patients. Most people go into medicine because they're people, and they like interfacing with patients, and they like helping their healthcare and learning about them. And when that joy goes away and it's replaced by these administrative activities, it just minimizes that personal contact. I think those things mount together to lead to this well-described phenomenon called physician burnout. We did a study of that here, and our rates were similar to what is present in the United States. In the range of 40 to 50 to 60% of physicians feel burned out. It reduces their effectiveness, and it makes them really lose interest in their job. And it doesn't matter what specialty it is. It doesn't matter how old you are. It's generally in that 40 to 60% range. And we're trying to do all kinds of things to prevent that, but I think it's occurred to many of us that it's nothing so simple as having some easy fixes like having a relaxation half hour a day or doing yoga or something like that. Not that that's not good, but it's got to be followed by fundamental changes in the way that we practice medicine and our expectations of physicians.
So who's undertaking that?
Well, we're trying to. I think many places are. We're making every effort to try to increase the flexibility of scheduling, to use what are called scribes, who are non-medical folks, non-physicians, who can handle some of the paperwork chores, to create a culture in which doctors feel comfortable asking for help. That is a big issue in medicine, the culture of, well, I need to do my job, I shouldn't be asking for help. So trying to change that culture. We've established two groups, one to look at these kinds of meaningful changes among our doctors, and the second to focus on those same kinds of changes in residents. We've established a wellness office, which is just opening, which will be committed to looking at these issues from sort of top to bottom. So it's not an easy journey, and it's not going to be a fast journey, but I know we are, I am, and we are absolutely committed to making the kind of fundamental change that will help our trainees and our physicians have the joy of medicine.
This may sound simply put, but sounds like you're saying doctors are people too.
Yes, exactly.
Dr. Marshall Runge is the dean of the University of Michigan Medical School, addressing a serious issue with doctors new and those who've been around for a while. And we appreciate you taking the time with us here on 89.1 WEMU to tell us about what you're hoping to do to fix the situation.
My pleasure. And we're always open to ideas of how we can improve, and we'd love to hear fresh ideas about how we can make this better for our doctors and for our patients. At the end of the day, we all want our patients to do well, and we want to help them improve their health. And one of the ways we can do that is to be healthy ourselves.
All right. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.